You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
I'm sure you've heard about the dark web, but do you know really what it is? It's a place on the internet where criminals sell illegal drugs, they launder money, and they commit other crimes, often with little or no repercussions. It's a place where hackers buy your stolen credit card credentials, your account numbers, your passwords, your IDs. There are black markets on the dark web. This is from Wikipedia. Selling or brokering transactions involving drugs, cyber arms, weapons, counterfeit currency, forged documents, unlicensed pharmaceuticals, steroids, and other illicit goods. You can't find the dark web using a basic Google search. You have to use special tools like Tor, and you need to know exactly what you're doing. I don't recommend going to the dark web. It's an easy way to get your system hacked and see things that, well, you just can't unsee. And whenever there's a data breach, that data comes up for sale on the dark web. Like, here are some recent cases. Estee Lauder, 440 million internet records were reportedly exposed due to some security failures. Yeah, that was this year. Also this year, Marriott. The hotel chain suffered a cyber attack in which email accounts were infiltrated. 5.2 million hotel guests were impacted. Whisper, yeah, the anonymous secret sharing app, exposed millions of users' private profiles and data sets online. So much for being anonymous. Nintendo, 160,000 users. Email it, 600,000 users. Just the other day, a devastating cyber attack targeting major branches of the U.S. government and federal computer systems was attacked. And recently, there was a devastating cyber attack targeting major branches of the U.S. government and federal computer systems. The attackers, they say, are likely tied to the Russian government. So what does this mean to you? Yeah, your personal data is now at risk. The attackers exploited a vulnerability in software from SolarWinds. It was called FireEye. And they breached the Commerce Department, the Treasury Department, and likely many others. They say possibly the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI. They were looking for intel about how the U.S. would actually plan a cyber attack. So basically, the hackers hacked our hacking methods and plans. And yeah, you probably got hacked too. If you used a government website such as the IRS, the SBA, Social Security, you have to change your password immediately. And you want to watch out for phishing scams and phone scams and bogus texts. And of course, verify any message you get with an actual phone call before doing anything, before acting. And the records from the cyber attack will end up on the dark web for sale, no doubt. But let's play a guessing game. How much do you think a stolen online bank account sells for on the dark web? What about a stolen credit card, a phony driver's license, or even a forged passport? By Privacy Affairs estimates, a full digital footprint of one person costs about $1,300 on average. That's less than $2,000 for your bank account, your social media, your PayPal, and everything else in between. In this podcast, we're going to go deep into the dark web and find out what's for sale now. What are these cyber criminals doing with one of the nation's top cybersecurity experts, Itay Meier? You don't want to miss this. It's fascinating knowing how all this works. And once you do, you'll be equipped with all the intel that you need to make sure that you're not their next victim. So stay right where you are.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Itay, thank you so much for being here. We start talking about the scams of 2020. Which one just surprised you the most?
Well, with surprise, I think one of the attacks that I was surprised to see more of was attacks around the COVID-19, specifically ones against the hospitals. There was some sort of understanding that there are red lines that even criminals don't cross, especially at a time of crisis, and seeing them go after both hospitals and patients at a time like this could have been expected, but I was surprised at the magnitude, to be honest.
Well, I thought in the beginning when the pandemic first hit that the hackers and the scammers, they kind of called a moratorium, didn't they? And say, you know what, we're going to give everybody a free pass for a while.
Yeah, especially the ransomware groups, they specifically posted about this and said that they're not going to do this. And that thing didn't last for, I think, 24 hours. And we've seen everything from attacks against organizations to the vaccine manufacturers, but even down to the actual patients and patient data, where they were going after the patients themselves, like the attack that happened in Finland for the psychiatric healthcare provider. But also here in the U.S., attacks against hospitals at a time of a crisis like this, it's a new border that I didn't think they would cross.
Well, the attack with the patients in Finland, that's just horrible. Walk us through a little bit about that one.
So the attack in Finland, what happened was the attackers there got access. Apparently they had access already about a year or two ago, and that wasn't reported. But they were able to access a healthcare provider that helps mental patients. And what was really different about this attack is usually when the attackers go after a healthcare provider, be it a hospital or an insurance or whoever deals with healthcare data, they go after the organization. So they ransom the data and ask for money. Here, instead, what they did is they collected information about the patients and then reached out to the patients over email saying, hey, we have your psychological records, pay us $500 or we're posting it on the internet. And for somebody who's already under stress and some of them don't feel good about going to a psychiatrist or a psychologist, adding this type of pressure is unheard of.
That's just horrible. And just because it happened in Finland, I don't want anybody to think, well, of course, you know, that's Finland. It can't happen in the United States, because it can happen in the United States.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can really. Most of the security personnel and teams that I talked to today, even within very advanced organizations, nothing is off the table at this point.
I don't think a lot of people realize how easily they can have their data sold on the dark web. Let's backtrack just a little bit, because, you know, so many people, they hear about the dark web and they've never seen it. They've never been there, which, if you don't know what you're doing, you should not go there. It's not terribly difficult to tap into the dark web. But the times that I have seen it, and I never use a computer that I'm going to be on ever again, okay, is that it looks like an Amazon, but they're selling databases of passwords and credit card numbers. Explain it for our listeners.
Sure. So to kind of understand, first to give the scope, when you look at the internet today, we tend to look at it at three different layers, so to speak. There's the clear web, the deep web, and the dark web, right? The clear web is anything you can find on Google, Bing, whatever your search engine is. The deep web are areas of the internet that are not indexed, meaning they're behind a username and password. For example, you can find Bank of America, but you can't find my account in Bank of America because that's behind a username and password. And the third layer is the dark web, which means that you need to use special software in order to connect to this specific network. And this it has a specific software. There are specific URLs you need to know where to go to. They're not easy to guess. In many cases, you have to know where you're going. But as you mentioned, it's not that difficult to download the extensions, the browsers, in order to connect to the dark web these days. You can find a lot of examples on YouTube on how to do this, but you really need to be aware of where you're going, because the dark web has been used by a lot of cyber criminals for buying and selling of goods and services. And also, of course, it's monitored by law enforcement, heavily monitored by law enforcement wherever they can monitor it. And what happens is there was this saying I heard in one of the movies, if you give someone a mask, they'll show you their true face. So this, the dark web gives a lot of people the mask to hide behind, and they buy and just sell a lot of different things there. And I think one of the things that people tend to miss about the dark web, because it's so mystified because of the name, is the fact that that is what actually that alongside with bitcoins and cryptocurrency is what boomed the economy for cyber criminals, because they have now an anonymous way to communicate, an anonymous way to do transactions. And so it's kind of like a celestial alignment for them. And that's why there was a big boom in cybercrime, because they can operate with relative safety.
So give us some examples of what you might see for sale on the dark web. Like, how much is a database, say, I don't know, 1,000 names and social security numbers? And what I always find fascinating is that also on the dark web is that you can actually buy these how-to kits. So if you wanted to, I don't know, suddenly get into ransomware, if you had $500 or $800, that you could do that.
Right. So the dark web actually started, the biggest boom for it in the beginning was actually with drugs, with illegal drugs on websites like Silk Road, which was managed by a person here in the U.S. But later it quickly moved to also cybercrime. So you can find anything, as you mentioned, from credentials like databases or individual accounts. You can buy complete databases from banks. So thousands of lines of username, account numbers, passwords, addresses, and everything that the bank has usually starts for a couple $1,000s for the complete database. There are other shops, like you mentioned, they look like Amazon. You go in and you say, you look for specific bank accounts in specific banks or cities, and you just add them to your cart, like a shopping, you have a shopping cart and you add them in. And these cost between $10 to $100, depending on how much balance is within the account. But it doesn't end with financial information. You can find healthcare data. You can find exploits to software. And then you move to some of the more interesting stuff, I think, is if not even the products, it's the services. So you can hire people that will help you. They'll set up a phishing page for you. Or there's ransomware as a service. So it's not only goods, it's also services. And that's why I think it really lowered the bar for anybody who's trying to become a criminal. Even if you're not super technical, like you had to about 20 years ago to be super technical to do these. Today, you just go on the dark web and you can buy all the different components and have an attack up and running.
And some of these components astound me that, for example, if you send somebody a ransomware note or extortion or whatever, be a webcam thing, is that that you can actually provide 1-800 numbers for tech support and say, so if you're not really sure how to do Bitcoin, call this number.
Yeah.
I mean, they've really taken this whole ransomware to a whole new level. I mean, it suddenly is now, it looks like it's just keeps exploding.
Yes. So, there's actually two elements here of the service that are interesting. Number one is you can buy different services, criminal services, and they offer support for the buyer. So they'll say, okay, you can buy this, for example, hosting facility to host your criminal website. We offer, you know, silver, gold, platinum support levels and SLA, service level agreements, how fast we'll help you if you have a problem, or a direct connection to our IT staff to help you. The other element is what you mentioned around the ransomware groups that set up their own support services. And what happened is when they started doing these ransomware attacks against individuals about 5-6 years ago, they encrypted people's computer. And then they realized that those people who were attacked don't necessarily know how to pay them. And so they set up these support centers saying, okay, let us give you a step-by-step guide here, or a person who will guide you how to buy Bitcoins and send them over to us. And the last evolution of that I've seen now is these support centers that are used as negotiation platforms for large organizations. I've seen different communications on these channels where somebody got infected with a ransomware in an organization. They reached out to the support and said, yeah, we need our files to be decrypted. And the support said, no problem. It's going to be $10 million. And they start a conversation around that and a negotiation around how much they would pay and when, and end up paying a certain amount and getting their files decrypted.
It's just amazing to me that we have all this information, all this data about the dark web, but for some reason, we just can't quite shut it down. Why is that? Well, stay right where you are, because when we come back with Tech You Should Know, we're going to talk about why we can't shut them down, and also the big scams of 2020 and the ones that we need to look out for in 2021. So stay right where you are.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Libsyn Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's libsynads.com.
Welcome to Tech You Should Know. We're talking to Itay Marer. And Itay is a big friend of the Kim Komando Show, the national radio show, and also here on the podcast. He just knows everything about cybersecurity. And we've been talking about the dark web, Itay. My question is, and people have always asked me this, and I don't really have a great answer for it. How come we can't shut the dark web down? Is it because it's so decentralized?
So several reasons why we can't and maybe even don't want to do that. Number one is when we say the dark web, it's not just Tor. Everybody talks about Tor, the onion route, but there are other dark webs. There's I2P, the Internet Invisible Protocol. There's Freenet. There's several other dark webs. And yes, they are decentralized. Some of these servers and some of their routing points are on legitimate computers. And by the way, the dark web does have some legitimate usages. Actually, Tor, that everybody knows about the dark web, was something that was developed in the U.S. military. And they do have some legitimate usages for anonymity. But of course, the majority of the communication we see there today is criminal related. So we can't shut it down because it is decentralized. And then there's the question is of, do we want to shut it down? Because today, a lot of security agencies and a lot of companies that collect information, intelligence information, know how to monitor certain areas. And this is a classic intelligence question, just like in the military. If you have a good source, do you shut it down or do you continue monitoring it and make sure that you are in the know on what criminals are doing? Because we have seen this evolution. We used to have these forums on the clear web. We shut them down. They went to the deep web, made it a lot harder. We started taking down dark web websites. And then they went now onto things like Telegram and WhatsApp and groups of P2P communications, which are even harder to get into. So do we want to encourage the next evolution or do we want to monitor what we know?
All right. So the big scams of 2020, we already talked about ransomware at the hospitals and that crazy case in Finland. What were some other big things that you saw?
So in connection to COVID, what we've seen the pandemic unemployment assistance scams. Kind of a classic approach, a new approach to a classic type of attack where they try to scam people out of money that's supposed to be given to them. What was interesting is the criminals that were discussing this said that the government officials that are trying to help citizens get money because of the current situation are under so much pressure that it's really easy to scam actually the government and create a persona and get the money because they don't do all the checks and they're really burdened with doing it really fast and over the internet. So the criminals understood that the government has a lot of requests for money. It's really hard to validate each and every request. And on top of it, you can't meet face to face. It's all done over the phone or the internet. And the criminals started discussing this and saying, hey, this is a place that we can target. On top of that, you had the classic attacks, right? Phishing attacks, all kinds of these tech support scams, the computer update scams that have been around for a while. And not really in the world of scams, but in the world of, but something that we see more of. There's been a lot of discussion about it as well. Some really good documentaries of the whole area of disinformation and misinformation.
Well, before we get to that I do want to talk about that. Let's just stick on the scams for just a second, Itay, because I had this guy call a show, and he got a phone call from Apple computer. Okay, well, that should have been his first red flag, right? And they explained to him that as they were going through their security checks in his iCloud account is that they found some child pornography in his iCloud account. And they needed to have access to his computer because they're trying to figure out where this kiddie porn came from. Okay. Horrific crime, no doubt. So this guy's like, oh, man, I don't know what's going on. And so he gives them access to his computer. They go, it gives him all the credentials to his iCloud account. And then the people from Apple convince him that, you know, in order to clean out the account, that they need to have $1,000. Okay. Again, another red flag. And also because they needed to be paid in Apple gift cards. Okay. So this goes on. and they start cleaning out his computer, quote unquote, they say. They're cleaning out his iCloud account. At some point, they have access to his banking information. All totaled, this guy lost $90,000. Okay. $90,000. So for people who are wondering, like, why there are so many scams, this is just one person. One person for 90 grand. And so these scams are getting more nefarious, meaning that for this guy was frightened that somebody had put child pornography in his iCloud account. And he kept paying him and paying him until he thought that it was done. And actually, it was more than $90,000 because they had access to his wife's bank account. His wife came to him and said, why did you just withdraw $10,000? So he's well over $100,000. And then we also have the webcam scams where, you know, they send you an email. They say they have a picture of you doing something on your webcam and they're going to spread it out to everybody else. What are some other examples that you've seen?
Yeah, so there were several examples of the kinds you just mentioned. There were the ones that with the emails that said, we know you went into a different just adult websites. We saw you when you on your camera when you did that. We have those. We need money. And as you mentioned, there's a lot of red flags. You know, we can't really judge people. It's hard to judge people who are under this pressure or not familiar with these types of scams. But there are a lot of red flags. A lot of these cases can be almost neutralized initially just by calling whoever claims to be calling you and asking for, you know, hey, I just got a call. Was it really you, Apple? Was it really you, Microsoft? These companies don't tend to just call up people at all, not them, not law enforcement, and not even your bank that often to do, you know, any technical type of support. And it's unfortunate, but that's what criminals are doing. You know, the weakest element or the easiest to hit element is the human, unfortunately, because attacking technology is hard, but social engineering somebody to do something, putting them under immense amount of pressure, under sometimes even claims of illegal activity, unfortunately, that's pretty easy for the attackers, and we see a lot of that.
So where do you think most of the attackers are located?
A lot of them are not in the U.S. Sometimes they will have some foot soldiers in the U.S., but the brains, they are not here. Because if they do get identified and you know, law enforcement goes after that, you don't want to be in a country that will move you to the U.S. or that will you know, either put you in prison or give you to the U.S. So a lot of them are in Eastern Europe. We've seen some of these farms of criminals in Africa. Every country has its own kind of like area that is known to have cyber criminal activity. In South America, there's a lot happening in Brazil. There are gangs in Vietnam. And that's just, you know, the cybercrime ones, not the nation state.
Yeah, because it always seems like, you know, well, why can't we find them? Why can't we just figure out where they're located and cut their lines? But there are just so many entry points and there are so many people located around the world. I mean, the internet is a great equalizer on so many different levels, but it also gives complete and total access to criminals no matter where they're located. So that's why you really always need to have your guard up. And as Itai so astutely stated, you know, pick up the phone. We're so inclined to just reply to an email or to take something on the internet at face value. Even if you get a text on your phone, you need to always be cautious and to question that. And if you have older family members, you want to give them this intel as well. You want to talk to them about it. If you ever get a call, if you ever get an email, if you ever get a text, you know, before you do anything with it, why don't you just go ahead and show it to me? That's the conversation that I had with my mother. And let me tell you, I prevented her from falling for a lot of scams. Okay, stay right where you are, because coming right up, we're going to talk about the scams of 2021. What do we have to look forward to? Yeah, I say that with tongue in cheek, of course. So stay right where you are.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Hey, welcome back to Tech You Should Know. We're talking to Itay Morer. He's a big friend of the Kim Komando radio show and also here on the podcast, and he's a big wig in the Intel security industry. So, Itay, 2021, here we come. What do we have to look forward to?
So I think one of the main things we need to look into, and it also connects with what you mentioned about helping and stopping some of these threats, is realize that a lot of us are now working from home, remote work, and we need to pay attention to our environment and our family. What do I mean by that? We're working, we're bringing our work computer into the network. We're connecting a lot of devices. I think something we really need to pay attention to is how do we secure these devices properly? And when I say secure these devices, I'm not talking about you have to have a master's in cybersecurity to do these basic stuff that we can do to avoid different types of attacks against these devices, because these devices are being targeted by attackers, and also protect our family, and not just our parents that may not be familiar with these types of attacks. We also have kids who fall for different scams on different games, and they're connecting with their devices to the same network that we are on. So I think it's something that is worthwhile looking into, doing the very basic stuff to help us avoid some of these attacks. Some of the things that I think we're going to see more of in 2021, criminals are going to start using, I think, a little bit more of not necessarily AI, but there have been a lot of conversations around deepfakes and face swapping and puppet master and all kinds of capabilities to create false faces, false identities. I think that's something we really...
But you know what? And I think I really believe that deep fake, not only pictures, but also voices, it's going to be really exploding in 2021. And for those of you that aren't accustomed to, you haven't heard what a deep fake is, basically using AI, and I guess you'd say like a version of Photoshop and Premiere on steroids, is that you can make anybody say anything, and you can do that with their images on video, but also with their voice. You know, it always reminds me, Itay, of that story that I think it was somewhere in Czechoslovakia where a guy got a phone call from his boss, and the boss says, oh, you know, we need to transfer, $100,000 to our vendor immediately, and I need you to do that now. And the guy's like, well, this is the boss, this is his voice, I better go ahead and do it. Well, as you can tell, I'm telling the story, is that it wasn't true, it wasn't the boss. And after the guy transferred $250,000 to a vendor that went to someplace in China and then bounced someplace else around the world, is that they were out $250,000 and it was a total fake voice. So in next year, we really need to be careful of deep fake videos and deep fake voices, because from what I understand, Itay, and the research that I've done, when you look at a deep fake video, there really isn't a telltale sign that it is a deep fake, is it?
No, it's extremely hard to identify these, even using some advanced technology. And I've talked to some companies who are trying to do this technology-wise. It's extremely hard. And when you connect that with the fact that it can be used to synthesize voice, to synthesize pictures, and these things are used for identification, they can also, unfortunately, be used for some of the attacks we mentioned for extortion. So, hey, we have you on video doing this or that, or, you know, stuff like that I fear is where it's going. The other side of the deep fake and the use of artificial intelligence is you now have software that's capable of creating pictures. I don't know if you've seen this game, like if you go on Google and search, this person does not exist, there's a website that will create a picture of a person who doesn't exist. And you cannot tell that this is not a real person. And using that to create fake personas and create synthetic IDs, I think that's something that criminals are going to start using not too far in the future.
You know, that would be interesting to see if it's taken to the next level with romance scams. I can't tell you how many times I get a call from a guy, and it's normally a man, who says that some hot model in Turkey has the hots for him, you know, and he's sitting in a trailer in Fresno, California. I'm like, I got to tell you, I'm sorry, dude, it's probably all fake. But now they can totally manipulate somebody's emotions. And once they get their emotions, then the money will flow by using this deep fake technology.
Yeah. And I mean, when you really put now, not only there's simple software that can do this, even stuff you can download to your phone to do face swap that looks pretty convincing. But now when you're talking about What I think is another thing that I wanted to discuss regarding 2021, if you have more budgets around these and nation state attacks, it becomes even more nefarious, because what we're going to probably see more of in 2021, not that we haven't seen this so far, is attacks by nation states against private organizations, not necessarily just against nation states. So we already know right now, for example, that different nation state actors are looking to attack and collect information about the vaccine that's being manufactured. But more and more events that are political in nature will affect us, individuals. I'll give you an example. There was recently an event in the Middle East in Iran, an assassination. The Iranians are saying that Israel is behind it. Right now, there's an Israeli insurance company. All the details about people who got insured are now spilled online, supposedly by Iranian attackers. And so what you see is you see a military or political situation turn into something that, hey, me at home, now my information is exposed because of that event. And you know, we used to talk about how, a cyber attack mean that we have to do a kinetic attack against a country? Now, all of a sudden, a kinetic attack, a physical attack, results in a cyber attack. And like you said, the internet levels the playing field. So now, citizens, just people at home, they are in the front line, and they're actually an easier target than the military complex. And so we'll probably see more of these attacks as well.
So do you think there's the potential of a cyber attack that would take out the power grid?
Attacks against critical infrastructure have already happened. We've already seen this happen in the Ukraine a couple of years ago. Is it possible? Theoretically, yes, that is possible. But I think something like taking down the power grid, because there are so many things that this affects, to me, that's almost like a physical attack, like saying we're going into war. Because if you take down electricity, if it's something major, it affects hospitals, it affects people at home, it affects manufacturing, it affects so many elements that when it goes to critical infrastructure, yeah, I mean, we've seen even more secure systems than that being targeted. But I think nation states that do something like this, they know they're crossing a certain line if they do that.
See, I always find it interesting that when we talk about like a massive cyber attack, that there are people who say, yeah, you know, we have to be careful for that. And then there are other people who say, no, you know, because everything's so distributed, there's no way that it could affect me. But let's go back to our own government. For many, many years, our government has had a website called ready.gov. Okay. If you go to ready.gov and they tell you basically to have 3 months of your medicines and or at least a couple of weeks of vital medicines and maybe some cash on hand and food and, yes, even toilet paper. And I'm the person that's always like the glass has always been half full. I mean, everything's always going to be like rainbows, ponies, and flowers. But when it comes to a cyber attack, I really believe that, you know, you have to have some necessities in your home just in case something were to happen, whether it's by accident or whether it's by intent, is that we are so dependent upon technology and the internet right now, is that you just have to have a little bit of forethought, I think.
And you know what, maybe in that sense, it's just a little bit of a silver lining that the situation we're facing now actually forced us to be a little bit more prepared. And I think people do have a little bit more things in their houses just in case they need to stay for a longer period. And you're right, we're not even aware of how dependent we are on all of this. I mean, personally, I don't remember the last time I even touched money. Because I don't use cash anymore. I just use my phone. I don't even use a card. I use my phone, right?
And it's fabulous. I love it. I mean, that you don't need to, you can just go swipe your phone, tap your phone on a checkout. And then, somebody gave me a check the other day and I was like, I guess I need to deposit this and I can do it through the banking app. I know, but why don't you just like Apple Pay me or Venmo or whatever it is? It's very interesting that we live in these times.
We're moving this like, so it used to be cash, right? And then it became cards and then it became a phone. Now I'm doing it with my Fitbit. I use that to pay. And we know the next step is going to be something in our body, in our hand, like that we're going to be able to use that. It keeps getting more convenient, but we keep being more and more dependent on it. So yeah, definitely something to pay attention to.
So Itai, we're running out of time. Any final words about what's to come in 21?
For 2021, we're probably going to see some of the same attacks that we've seen in 2020. And I think I would like to give some ideas of how to really try and avoid some of these and prevent some of these attacks. When you have a system at home, regardless of what it is, your computer, your mobile device, your router, your printer, which is on Wi-Fi, your webcam, do the basic security checks on them. Change default passwords. Don't leave them at admin or 1234. And choose just a little bit more complex passwords. If you have a hard time remembering all your passwords, use a password wallet that keeps these things secure. Patch your systems. Make sure that you have the latest software updates, the latest security updates. Don't ignore those little pop-ups on the bottom right of your corner because those are critical. That's what attackers use. They use known vulnerabilities. They try not to invent the wheel every time and use stuff that is already out there. So make sure that you patch your systems. And I think one of the more important things connected to the story that you mentioned here before, Kim, as well, is always be vigilant. Be aware that these attacks are out there. Nobody's trying to give you millions of dollars, from Nigeria. Nobody is trying to help you with a security issue you might have on your iCloud. And so it's always good to question. In the military, my sergeant told me, when there is a doubt, there's no doubt. So even if you have a little bit of doubt, it's too good to be true or sounds just a little bit too good, then it probably is.
I like that saying. What was that saying anytime? What was it? What did your military guys say?
So if there is a doubt, there's no doubt. So if you have even a little bit of, then no questions asked, then don't do it.
I love that. That's fabulous. That should be like the motto for 21. Okay. Itai, thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate your insights. And if somebody wants to learn more about your company, how can they do that?
So you can always go to insights.com, and we have a blog there. We try to report on some of these latest attacks. And really happy to be here, Kim. Thank you for having me. I think it's really important that people are aware of these types of threats and that we all do a better job of protecting ourselves and our families against cyber threats.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Tech You Should Know podcast with Kim Komando. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe so you get these automatically downloaded to your device every single week. And if you haven't checked out GetKim.com, it's your chance to go behind the scenes and watch us record the show on Fridays. You can join us in the chat rooms, come behind the scenes and watch as we chat about what's going on at commander.com, and you can download the podcast and listen on your schedule with limited commercial interruptions. Again, that's at getkim.com. Right now you get a free 30-day trial, then it's just a few bucks a month after that. Thank you again for listening to Tech You Should Know, and we'll see you next time.